Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, choked, tasered, and arrested. A teenage girl in Washington State fighting back against an officer who attacked her, who he claims is wrong. Well, guess what? That officer was the one who attacked this young lady. Folks, wait till you see this video. We'll talk to her attorney. Search efforts underway. Family members plead for help in locating a University of Columbia student. I'll talk with her mother and the private investigator assigned to the case. The NFL takes a stand against domestic violence. The National Football League joins forces with a call to men to end violence against women. We'll talk with founders Tony Porter and Troy Vincent, an NFL executive, right here about their 5-city tour. It's also Fit, Live, Win Monday, and we're talking with Donna Richardson Joyner about her new workout DVD video, national tour, and what can inspire all of us to get healthy and fit. Time to bring the funk on News One Now, TV One.
Honestly, felt dead for a second. Like, I felt alive because the electricity running through my veins, but I didn't feel anything.
That 17-year-old Monique Tillman describing her traumatic encounter with an off-duty police officer outside a mall in Tacoma, Washington. Tillman is now fighting back against the officer and also the owner of the mall with a lawsuit seeking unspecified damages. The initial attack happened 2 years ago when Tillman was just 15 years old. She claims Officer Jared Williams tried to hit her and her brother as they rode their bikes home. Tillman says things quickly spiral out of control from there. She spoke to us last night via Skype about the encounter.
Well, me and my brother, we were on our way home, and we took a shortcut through the mall, and then there was a mall security that came up to us, and he was harassing us. Yeah, the police officer came up, asked me what my name was, and I asked him what I did wrong and what crime did I commit, because, you know, he was obviously a cop, you know, and he didn't have an answer. I just felt like I was being harassed. He choked me, grabbed me by my hair, tried to slam my face into the concrete, and he kicked me in the face. I honestly felt dead for a second. Like, I felt alive because the electricity running through my veins, but I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel nothing. It took me a second to realize I was being tased, but I was confused as to why they stopped me. Quite frankly, I was kind of mad, too, because deep down, I knew the answer. Definitely because of my skin color. That's the only reason they stopped me. That's the only reason they wanted to know my name and where we were going. And that's the only reason I got tased, because I'm black. If you look up, you know, someone being attacked and someone being assaulted, that's what happened to me. You know, and they deserve to be held accountable for their actions. I think I'm just going to hope that they take responsibility for what they did. And then whatever happens after that, really up to the court.
Folks, Tillman was eventually charged in juvenile court for resisting arrest and assaulting an officer. The officer is still on the force at the Tacoma Police Department. Joining us via FaceTime is Monique Tillman's attorney, Vito De La Cruz. Also in the studio is our panel, Angela Peoples, co-director of Get Equal, Sher Michael Singleton, Republican political consultant, Yolanda Young, columnist and attorney for Lawyers of Color. Attorney De La Cruz, she's riding a bike. I'm just trying to understand, how can two kids riding a bike end up with her getting slammed against the car, choked, tasered, and kicked on the ground?
It's an extraordinary story, for sure. But essentially, that's the reality that these kids ran into almost 2 years ago. And unfortunately, I believe it's also the reality that a lot of African-American kids live with on a day-to-day basis.
This officer is still on the force. Was he ever disciplined?
No. To the contrary, sometime after the incident at the mall, The spokesperson for the Tacoma Police Department indicated that the officer essentially had been cleared of any wrongdoing and had an extraordinary follow-up comment as well, that in the Tacoma Police Department's determination, he could have used more force than he actually used that day, which is shocking.
This lawsuit, who are you targeting in the lawsuit?
Currently, we have named the police officer, the Simon Properties, who owns the Tacoma Mall, as well as Universal Security Services, who is the company that contracted security for the mall.
What is the police officer's name? Because oftentimes in these cases, folks don't necessarily reveal that. What's this cop's name?
Jared Williams.
Jared Williams. And so he's not disciplined. What did the city of Tacoma say? Was there ever any apology to Monique Tillman and her family?
None whatsoever. In fact, the response of the Tacoma Police Department and was to attempt to prosecute her and convict her for resisting arrest and assaulting an officer. Those charges were dismissed after trial.
What do you believe this says about our society? And again, the fact that we have this video, because the reality is, if we didn't have this video, it would be another example of a young black girl's word against a white police officer, as opposed to actually seeing his actions on that video.
Well, you're absolutely correct. Without the video, you would have a 15-year-old African-American girl's and her 16-year-old brother's word against a police officer, a white police officer, white security guards at a mall. And the result at the criminal trial may have been very different. And in many sense, it could have ended any attempt or to seek justice on the civil side of the case as well.
And so how is Monique Tillman doing today? Is she any counseling? Has she had to deal with anything along those lines?
Yes, sir. And she's dealing with this as best she can. She's a resilient and very strong young woman. And she wants to seek justice. She will get justice. We trust that the folks in Tacoma, once they hear all of the facts of this case, will decide accordingly and award her just compensation for her damages.
All right. Vito Dela Cruz, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
I want to go to thank you very much, sir. I want to go to our panel right here. Again, this is a perfect example of America finally coming to realize the kind of attitudes that are existing on police departments when you got two kids riding bikes and it results in her being choked, thrown against the car, and tasered.
And it's taken 2 years still.
Absolutely.
This is a result of the Black Lives Matter movement, our, you know, raised consciousness about these issues. This is deplorable. I mean, this is just unforgivable. And it's 2 years later. And note, her attorney said the charges weren't dismissed, Sir Michael, until after trial.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is interesting because what we're seeing a lot of is you heard Monique sort of talk about she knew what was happening. She knew what was wrong and she knew her rights. She started to drive to like sort of ride her bike away, feeling like the officer didn't have any, you know, sort of cause to hold her. And so we see more young people and just more people in general knowing more about their rights and how the police are supposed to interact with them. But what we don't see is the same sort of response from police officers adjusting their engagement with people, figuring out how to de-escalate these situations instead of just going straight to violence and even towards tasing when she was already on the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think looking at her, I mean, she didn't present a threat that required tasing or that required him to choke her.
That required
And my question, I guess, and you're the attorney here, and I guess my question to you would be, now that this video is released, do the prosecutors have an opportunity to press charges against this officer?
Oh, certainly the prosecutor does. And as we saw in with the South Carolina case, the Department of Justice may come in.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then, folks, another major story we are covering this morning, the sudden disappearance of Nayla Kidd. It's been 11 days since the University of Columbia student went missing. According to police, the 19-year-old Louisville, Kentucky native was last seen leaving a campus party at approximately 5 p.m. on May 5th. Since her disappearance, Nayla's Facebook has been deactivated, her credit cards canceled, her cell phone number changed. As investigators try to put the pieces together, Nayla's mother, Dr. LaCrease Kidd, is on a desperate mission to find her. She joins us via Skype with Neil Gossett, the private investigator assigned to the case. We certainly want to thank both of you for joining us. When was the last time you talked with your daughter?
The last time I talked with my daughter by phone was April 5th. And, yeah, by April 5th.
How did that conversation go? Did you also text her between that time? And was all of a sudden for her just to disappear and then to see this whole deactivation, that's extremely strange.
Well, my daughter and I, we talk on a regular basis, once or twice a month, and particularly at the top of the month, just to take care of, you know, like business-related matters. I did not, I mean, it was a normal conversation. I didn't sense that anything was wrong. And she and I have a very good relationship. So, you know, there was no strain between us.
Neil, you're a private investigator. What are there any clues, any leads, anything that can help us to figure out what happened to Nayla?
Yes, good morning, Roland. Thank you for your interest in this matter. And any time that we have a missing person, it poses special challenges. We've uncovered several leads that I'm following that are very important, and I've been able to piece together information that are connecting people with events, places and times, and I can't stress to you how important that is.
What has been the involvement of the New York police in this, and also campus police?
Well, to their credit, the initial report came from the campus police, and as a result therefrom, the New York City Police Department is actively involved in a missing persons investigation. So I want to applaud the officers of the 26th precinct here in New York City and all the investigators and detectives who are actively involved as their part of the investigation begins and they're sifting through the information that they have uncovered as well.
LaCrease, do you believe that that foul play was involved in this? Is there any indication that your daughter would decide to just fall off the grid on her own?
There are going to be a lot of speculations out there, and I'm not really here to speculate on that. I'm going to leave that in the trusted hands of my private investigator, Neil Gossett, as well as NYPD. They are very well equipped to figure out the reasons why. I'm here more as an advocate for my daughter, and you know, parents, we have to do that. If I didn't advocate for my daughter when she was in first grade, she would have been mislabeled as a slow learner. You know, she can be very introspective, and sometimes that can be mislabeled. And it turns out with consultation with state and learning systems, we actually learned that she was a gifted and talented youth. This is somebody who, well, now she's a young adult, but she values education. You know, she was awarded academic excellence that was endorsed by President Obama, George Bush. This is a young lady who has won scholarships to attend one of the top college prep schools at Ojai, California, at the Thatcher School. She received several scholarships for college, including Columbia University. I mean, this is someone who, I mean, she could have our conversation with you about history and would talk about it in such a passionate way. So no, this is someone who is really a genius and just a beautiful person.
Folks, if you have any information regarding Nayla's whereabouts, please contact the New York City Police Department's Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-577-TIPS. That's 1-800-577-TIPS. And certainly we hope the best for Nayla Kidd, LaCrease, as well as Neil Gossett. We appreciate you joining us on TV One. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Roland.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, coming up on News One Now, a sorority at one Alabama school under fire for creating several racist T-shirts. Also, fitness guru Donna Richardson Joyner will be in the house talking about her workout video and also how we can improve our overall health. 15 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
The mail carrier handcuffed and arrested by New York police back in March is no longer facing charges. Cell phone video shows Glenn Gray's tense encounter with four plainclothes officers. Gray's repeatedly tried to tell the officers he was a mail carrier. However, the officers ignored him, cuffed him, and then hauled him off to jail. Gray's was later released, but charged with disorderly conduct. Last week, Brooklyn's DA reviewed the video and then asked the judge to dismiss the charges, quote, in the interest of justice, or I would say in the interest of being stupid. Gray's attorneys say he approves of the dismissal and says his client doesn't want the officers to lose their jobs. The dude is wearing a male uniform.
Sure.
I'm just trying to figure out how four cops can't say, let's check his ID. Or he's got a uniform on.
Or they didn't even listen to him actually saying, this is, I'm doing my job. I'm trying to actually be a mail carrier.
But I will say that the justice process did work. The charges were dismissed. The officers did face some disciplinary actions.
No, so they should be fired.
Yeah.
No. See, this is one of those examples where I think...
Well, I don't know if they should be fired.
They should be fired. Because I think we're too nice. Because, absolutely. First of all, here's the piece. This guy gets stopped. He gets arrested. Mm-hmm. He goes to jail. He gets charged. Has impacted his life, and yeah, you later drop charges, but for the past 2 months, he's been having to deal with this.
Yeah, but even the gentleman himself stated that he didn't want the officers to
lose their
jobs.
But I think that we see these officers, if this situation were another day, maybe the officer was in a bad mood, we've seen these situations escalate.
No, we have, but again, let's look at the individual. The individual doesn't want the officers to lose their jobs.
I got you,
but it's about irrelevant.
You know better than the person who was arrested.
No, I got his opinion, but cops still should be fired.
Exactly. I know what's legal and what's illegal.
You know what's,
fortunately,
okay,
Brooklyn does have a proactive district attorney who dismissed this case. But we've seen endless cases of students who've been abused by officers and then charged.
Of course,
and charged.
Dismissing those things. What I'm saying, Roland, is that
them, sir,
the guy
Michael.
Said he doesn't want the officers
I got
to lose
it.
Their jobs, and I'm going to stick with what
well,
he
well,
said.
Well, but here's the deal, though. Someone else could say don't want to lose their job, but here's a piece. Those four cops could likely do that again. I'd rather have officers on the force who are doing their job right than those folks are doing the job wrong.
And likely
fair
we'll
enough.
Do it again.
Let's go to Alabama, folks. The Alpha Delta Pi sorority at Samford University near Birmingham under fire for their racist T-shirts. The shirts show a black man eating a watermelon and people picking cotton. Take a closer look at the shirt. The sorority decided it was a good idea to feature a vintage-style map of Alabama on the shirts. According to the sorority, they didn't notice the racist cartoons on the map. Really? The university denied the sorority's request to make the shirt, but the sorority decided to do it anyway. After the picture surfaced of the shirt, the university and sorority apologized. The sorority has agreed to destroy the shirts. Okay, university told you.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
But we didn't notice the dude in a watermelon and...
Trump Nation.
How do you not see it?
I think Trump Nation is the exact statement for this.
How do you blame that on Donald Trump? Are you kidding me?
No.
All those quotes could be four featured New York police officers.
Exactly. Well, but I think what we see is the sorority was suspended because they went around the university. The university said, do not do this for, I'm sure, the reasons that were clear to the sorority.
Hello.
They said, we're doing it anyway because we don't care about these policies. And I think that this is the same kind of, you know, sort of attitude, like bucking the system and we get to do what we want that you see at the Trump rallies time and time again.
I don't know how in the heck you draw Donald Trump into any of this. The fact of the matter is the sorority should have listened to the university. They did not. They did something that was extremely insensitive. They should be punished for it. Simple as that.
I think it's just still, it's pretty much dumb. All right, folks, new information suggests Nelson Mandela's arrest near Durban, South Africa in 1962 was the result of a tip-off from an agent of the Central Intelligence Agency. That's according to an interview with ex-CIA agent Donald Ricard shortly before his death earlier this year. Ricard worked as a diplomat in South Africa. In the interview published in the Sunday Times newspaper, he said Mandela was, quote, the most dangerous communist outside of the Soviet Union. Mandela always denied being a member of the party. Ricard says he tracked Mandela's movements and tipped off authorities, leading to his arrest. Mandela spent 27 years in prison before being released in 1990. Ricard's admission is bringing renewed pressure to declassify documents from the time. A spokesman for the African National Congress says, quote, the revelation confirms what we have always known, that they are working against us even today. It's not thumb-sucked. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's now confirmed that it did not only start now. There's a pattern in history. This, folks, is also one of the reasons I fundamentally believe that this information should be declassified. All documentation from the FBI and the CIA, not redacted, unredacted, should be released when it comes to MLK, when it comes to Malcolm X, when it comes to COINTELPRO, Black Panthers. And so I would hope that President Obama, he has not made a decision on some other papers, but I believe all of that should be declassified so we know the full extent to how this country spied on black liberators.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we also need to know that for looking at the kind of surveillance that's already been reported of current activists in the Black Lives Matter and Black Youth Project 100. This is obviously an ongoing pattern and something that we as activists need to be aware of as we're doing more of our organizing.
Well, I think, Roland, you know, with these incidents occurred 30, 40, 50 years ago. At this point in time, I don't think there's a national security risk to declassifying the documents. So I would say, what's the holdup?
Right, absolutely. All right, folks, we want to go to our next story here. That at 116 years old, the world's oldest person has died. No, that's so bad because that's the only time you know the person exists when they actually die. Susana Mushat Jones died Thursday in New York as the Guinness World Records official oldest person. She was born in a small town outside of Montgomery, Alabama in 1899. Her family says her long life is credited to her love of family and generosity to others. Also, folks, now the unofficial world's oldest person is Emma Morano of Italy. She's also currently 116 years old. First Howard University, now Rutgers University. President Barack Obama continued his college tour at the University of New Jersey on Sunday, gracing the stage to give the commencement speech. From political points to ideals of justice and reform, the commander-in-chief ignited the 2016 class of nearly 12,000 grads with this.
But I also believe that the arc of our nation, the arc of the world, does not bend towards justice or freedom or equality or prosperity on its own. It depends on us.
And although President Obama never mentioned the name of Donald Trump, guess what? Well, he did sort of come up throwing some shade Trump's way.
In politics and in life, ignorance is not a virtue. It's not cool to not know what you're talking about.
President Obama spoke there after 3 years of students and faculty telling the White House, please, Mr. President, show up to speak at our graduation. Well, they got their wish. All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, we will talk about Tony Porter and Troy Vincent, about them partnering with the NFL to deal with domestic violence in the league. Also, it's Fit Live Win Monday, and we're here with Donald Richardson Jr. As well, talking about hip-hop and fitness. All of that on News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Many conservatives for the last couple of decades have complained about political correctness, and you hear a lot of that from even Donald Trump. Well, that was the focus of Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, commencement address at Hillsdale College. Here's some of what the justice had to say.
And will be sorely missed. As the years since I attended college edge toward a half century, I feel a bit out of place talking with college students or recent graduates. Much has changed since I left college in 1971. Things that were once considered firm have long since lost their vitality, and much that seemed inconceivable is now firmly or universally established. Hallmarks of my youth, such as patriotism and religion, seem more like outliers, if not afterthoughts. So in a sense, I feel woefully out of place doing this or any commencement. My words will perhaps be more of a vintage nature than current in content. Words actually matter, not a current newspeak. I admit to being unapologetically Catholic, unapologetically patriotic, and unapologetically a constitutionalist. In my youth, we had a small farm. I am convinced that the time I spent there had much to do with my firm resolve to never farm again. Work seemed to spring eternal, like the weeds that consumed so much of our time and our lives and our efforts.
So in the speech, I want to go to our panel now, Angela Schermichael, Yolanda. So he's talking about this whole idea of how America has changed. But also there was a line in here that he said that I'm of a different time. Today, there is much more focus on our rights as citizens and what we are owed. It is not often that one hears of our obligations or duties as citizens. And then he later said, if we are not making deposits to replenish our liberties, then who is? Are we content to let others do the work? Well, first off, and I've talked about this on the show. If you're African-American, first slave came here in 1619, Emancipation Proclamation, 63, 65, you find out in Texas. The Reconstruction 12-year period ends in 1877. Jim Crow era comes in, goes all the way through the late 1800s, all the way through the 1900s, all the way up until you say 1970, and even still, you talk about still having to fight for rights. So technically, African Americans have been full Americans for 46 years of the 397 years we've been in this country. So yeah, Justice Thomas, we as African Americans are still demanding to be treated as a full American like Monique Tillman. Can I just ride a bike and not be accosted by the police officers? Can we not have a white sorority in Alabama wear a t-shirt with a black man eating a watermelon and some black folks on the shirt picking cotton? So yeah, so this whole idea of demanding full rights as guaranteed by the Constitution, technically, yeah, hell yeah, we still trying to do it. That ain't political correctness. That's called doing what's right.
Well, we're still in the process of getting those rights. And also, you know, he talks about sort of if we're not putting in the deposits or putting or banking on our own liberty. Well, black folks have been depositing for hundreds of years and not seen any return on that. So we are still trying to get what is owed to us, very much so.
And it's also ironic that he says he's a constitutionalist. Well, that's how the framers of the Constitution set the Constitution up. It is about our individual rights. It is about our protections, our inalienable rights, as you say, we've only had for 40 years.
But also, Schermichael, the framers of the Constitution also ensured he would not be seen as a full American.
That is correct. And I don't want to take out of context what the justice was saying because I did not hear or read the speech in its entirety. What I think, based upon what I heard, was what he was trying to say is that if you have a differing view, you should be allotted to voice that view. However,
I agree.
However, there are repercussions for what you say. So you have a right to say whatever you want, but don't be surprised if what you say gets you into some form of trouble.
Well, but also again, though, first of all, context absolutely matters.
Mm-hmm.
But my position on this whole idea of, let's talk about, the whole issue of patriotism. I mean, I get on the whole line. I'm with you on that one. But again, to Angela's point, as African-Americans, we made a hell of a lot of investment and deposits going down the line. And so when you, for an African-American, it's a constant state of, no, we want what's full and just and right. See, most people forget, Dr. King did not talk about equality. Right. He talked about freedom.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a black child, the moment a black child was born, to have the exact same rights and privileges as any white kid was born, as opposed to the moment you come out that, oh no, things are a little different from you. That's the thing. And so I think for an African American, we would love to be fully patriotic,
but
treat me fully as an American.
When you ask, you talk about sort of individual rights and fighting for your individual liberty and, you know, pulling yourself by your bootstraps. But for, I think we often see this attitude where that can only look a particular way. We only want to fight for individual freedoms when it's about freedom of speech, not when it's about your freedom to drive your bike home from the mall without being slammed and tased on the ground. And so there's, I saw in the words and also in the posture that, you know, hearkening back to the good old days, and you hear this from Donald Trump, where Americans would fight for their rights and fight for their individual freedoms in this more traditional way. But there isn't that same space and opportunity allowed for black folks to fight for their rights and to fight for their individual aspirations in our own way as well. And that, I think, is the rub from the hypocrisy that kind of comes up when you talk about from folks like Justice Thomas speaking to being a constitutionalist. Well, who gets to have access to the rights that are afforded to that constitution?
That's a legitimate question, and I'm reminded by the politics that was written by Aristotle when you talk about what makes a citizen. And Aristotle goes down through a plethora of variables of what makes someone a citizen and what doesn't make someone a citizen. And to your point, if you do have this doctrine that we all say, okay, we will obey by this doctrine to govern us, and we expect that this document that we think will govern us, we should all be entitled to the same rights equally, I think there is some legitimacy to the argument that there are some discrepancies as far as how certain groups and individuals are treated in this country versus others. And so I do think that there is legitimacy to that.
Let's make it plain. You know, black veterans fought for this country,
mm-hmm.
and came back from World War II and did not have the advantages, access to the GI Bill,
mm-hmm.
could not buy homes,
mm-hmm.
were forced into red line situations, did not get to have school paid for. So, you know, again, we are still dealing with the repercussions of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
as
not
well
getting
as,
a return on the investment that was made.
All right. I mean, again, to my point, I think there's a important philosophical argument to be had here, from conservatives to liberals to strict interpreters of the Constitution, as far as, do we have the same rights, though it says on paper we do?
Right.
Do we believe that? Do we perceive that to be the case?
Well,
and I think many people
would argue
not.
The evidence suggests that.
Yeah,
we don't need to have a philosophical argument
it's all right here.
Well, and I tell you what, you know, when Congresswoman Barbara Jordan spoke at the Watergate hearing in 1974, I think she kind of made it real plain in terms of what the original intent was. And so, and again, I know he's a Supreme Court justice. That's all great and wonderful. You can call yourself a strict constructionist, but the reality is this is how she broke it down when you talk about that Constitution, strict constructionist.
And hyperbole would not be fictional and would not overstate the solemnness that I feel right now. My faith in the Constitution is whole, it is complete, it is total. And I am not going to sit here and be an idle spectator to the diminution, the subversion, the destruction of the Constitution. who can so properly be the inquisitors for the nation as the representatives of the nation themselves? The subjects of its jurisdiction are those offenses which proceed from the misconduct of public men. And that's what we're talking about. In other words, from the abuse or violation of some public trust. It is wrong, I suggest, it is a misreading of the Constitution for any member here to assert that for a member to vote for an article of impeachment means that that member must be convinced that the president should be removed from office. The Constitution doesn't say that.
Now, in that, the great part where she said the Constitution is clear, when they said we the people, I wasn't included in that we the people. And it took a war, it took amendments, it took all of that for me to be included in we the people. And I would say, you can complain all you want about political correctness, but I would still say 397 years after the first slave came to this country, we still trying to fully get we the people.
And if you, again, submit to this document that governs us as people in this country, and you say this is a great document that governs us as a society, I don't see how anyone could holistically believe in that doctrine if all the people who are governed under that doctrine do not share the same freedoms.
Well, yeah, but again, though, we know we don't share it because we cover those stories every single day, and that's what I'm trying to say. So when people talk about political correctness, no, it's called demanding what's ours. Coming up, Troy Vincent and Tony Porter, founders of A Call to Men, join us to talk about teaming up with the NFL to focus on domestic and sexual abuse. Also, Donna Richardson Joyner is in the house. We're going to talk about the issue of fitness and Fit and Live Win. 19 before top of the hour. News One Now, TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
The United States, we the people. It's a very eloquent beginning. But when that document was completed on the 17th of September in 1787, I was not included in that we the people. I felt somehow for many years that George Washington and Alexander Hamilton just left me out by mistake. But through the process of amendment, interpretation, and court decision, I have finally been included in we the people.
I just want to go ahead and play that just so you know, just as a reminder. Some folks probably had never even seen that video. So that was just kind of important. And of course, that's also a woman from Texas. All right, folks, our next story. The NFL is tackling domestic violence and sexual abuse. The National Football League and an organization called A Call to Men have joined forces to create a violence prevention program teaching men and boys how to have respectful relationships with women and girls. It is geared toward NFL staff and players as well as high school and college coaches. A Call to Men is currently on a 5-city tour, including Houston, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles. The events are free and open to coaches, educators, or other men working with youth. Joining us via Skype from Tyson's Corner, Virginia, the creators of A Call to Men, Troy Vincent, Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the NFL and a childhood survivor of domestic violence, and Tony Porter, co-founder of A Call to Men. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hey, hey, how you doing, Roland? Thank you.
Doing great. I've actually talked to both of you, and I want to, Tony, I want to start with you first, because one of the things that you've always focused on, which has always bothered me, whenever we talked about domestic violence, you typically on television, you'll see panels of women. You'll see experts, women. And one of the things that I've always said is that if you are not having conversations with men about men and domestic violence, you're not going to be able to confront the problem.
Well, yes, and we would agree with that. Most conversations have been with women because women have been at the forefront of this issue historically. And for many of us, we've looked at it as a women's issue. Women have done it and continue to do it because so much of their survival has been rooted in it. But to your point, and true to your point, is we have to work with men. And actually, the majority of men are not abusive. It's a minority of men who are. But we as a majority, you know, we're silent to the abuse. And if you can get us on board, we can really be effective in preventing the violence, not just continuing to react and respond to it, but really begin to prevent the violence. And that's generally the work of A Call to Men.
I want to go to Troy. Troy, we see the case of Johnny Manziel, who's being charged, indicted in Texas. The case of Greg Hardy. I can go on and on and on. Countless examples. And the NFL, in the aftermath of Ray Rice, has made it clear they have to deal with this issue and so many others. So why was this important for you to get involved, to bring your expertise, but also bringing the NFL with you as well to this issue?
Well, I had the experience as a child witnessing violence for well over a decade through my childhood, the late 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And when you look at the current state and the gentlemen that you just mentioned, for us at the National Football League level, it's intervention and prevention all at the same time. And oftentimes, the men that have been either accused or have been perpetrators of violence against women, it's been tough to educate, to drive awareness. And I think, you know, the more we know, the more we've listened, we've learned, partnering with organizations like Tony and Ted and the Call of Men, we're in a better place. It's a long journey for us. But again, it's the intervention, the prevention, and also the accountability. It all has to take place that are taking place at the same time at the National Football League level.
Some of the things that you guys have laid out: principles of healthy, respectful manhood, embrace and express emotions, resist the pressure to be fearless, value a woman's life and treat all people equally, don't use language that denigrates women and girls, also develop an interest in the experience of women and girls, model a healthy, respectful manhood to other men and boys. Talk about those principles, please. Tony first.
Yeah, well, as men, the collective socialization of manhood at a call to men, we call it the man box, teaches boys to suppress their feelings and emotions with the exception of anger. It teaches us as men not to ask for help, that asking for help is viewed as a sign of weakness. It teaches boys to have a lack of interest in the experience of girls and young women outside of sexual conquest. You know, all of these things, a product of unhealthy relationships. None of these things, you know, really help men as we, in our quest to become healthy and whole. And, you know, so that it limits our ability to be healthy and whole, and it creates an unsafe environment for women and girls. It devalues the experiences of women and girls. So when we talk about healthy relationships, we're not just talking about intimate relationships. We're talking about relationships in general. We're actually talking about relationships between men, you know, how we communicate and how we be with each other as well. So we're really robbing ourselves of what we actually call collective liberation as men. These notions of manhood are holding us hostage and just not allowing us to be our authentic selves.
Troy?
Yes, and I'll tag on to what Tony just said. It's really about healthy relationships, and most think of that as in man and woman, but who's defining who a man is in your life? And oftentimes it's the coach for us as athletes or former athletes, and how we treat one another, how we respond to one another, conflict resolution. How are we resolving conflict? Well, I know what I can be by what I see. And resolving conflict, where I grew up in Trenton, New Jersey, it's the other end is violence, whether that's a man or a woman. But here we're bringing a forum together. We can talk about how do we resolve conflict, whether it's player to player, coach to player, coach to coach, but more importantly, the relationship that we have at home with our women, with our wives, our significant others, and our children.
Gentlemen, you're going to various cities. First of all, how can folks get more information on the tour?
They can visit our website, rollingacalltomen.org. Everything is listed there, all the dates and all the cities and where we'll be speaking. You know, we're really inviting coaches to be there. We believe that coaches have a tremendous amount of influence on our sons and other boys, on communities in general. Coaches, you know, we know, and coaches know, the truth of the matter is it's bigger than the game, it's bigger than the X's and O's of the game. It's about character development. They have this captive audience of boys, and holding, these boys are holding on to their every word.
Gotcha.
You know, we want to help them to develop a voice to really speak clearly to these issues and be part of this solution.
All right, Tony and Troy, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you, Roland.
When
we come
back,
we'll talk fitness with Donald Richardson, joining right here at News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, a few weeks ago, Donna Richardson joined us with us talking about her fitness video. And it was bootleg last time, so she didn't have the full graphic and everything. So now she got the graphic together. So she wanted to come show us a photo with her Daisy Dukes. And it's called Donna Richardson Old School Dance Party featuring Sugar Hill Gang, Grandmaster Melly Mel, and Scorpio. And so she joins us back with us. What's happening?
How are you? How's everybody?
I dream with Jeannie Hair. Do this. Come on, do it.
Hopefully, I can get people in shape. You know, it's going to take a little bit more than that.
Okay, so as opposed to the normal boring dance music, so right. You decided to go a little old school hip hop.
Yes, and you love old school. We all love old school. So I think God just gave
Except
me a vision.
Except Michael, he's trying to be all new school.
Oh, that's okay. We can do old school and new school. But
did you ever watch those black movies?
I did actually watch the movie.
Okay, he had never watched Harlem Nights. I told him he couldn't come back on the show unless he watched it.
You get a pass. He
don't get a pass. Ain't no black passes on here. We take black passes.
So about 12 years ago, God gave me a vision just to combine live music, a concert, with a party, with dancing. And I knew Sugar Hill Gang. I went to Sony Warner, was able to get the music rights, because on any video, you cannot get the music rights for original music. Mm-hmm. It's too costly. So I produced and owned the tape 12 years ago, could never release it because I was with big companies, whether it was with the Buns of Steel tapes, ESPN, Nike, all of those tapes were owned by those companies. And I am so grateful to them. But here it is 25 years later. This is the first time that I produce and own my own video.
So you own it?
Yes.
Meaning you. It ain't nobody else.
Ain't nobody
not
else.
Not a peer's fee. You owning it.
I'm owning it. I'm humble and I'm grateful to be back out there and to bless people, because this is not just about working out. This is about you being able to get not just your body in shape, but your brain in shape. Mm-hmm. I used to use dance for my dad. He had dementia. And it really helped improve his memory loss. It helped gave him clarity, helped him problem solve. Yes, we all know if you're working out, you're going to lose the weight, you're going to get stronger, you're going to increase your bone density. But this is one of those things that make you feel good. You know, you go down, back down memory lane, and you're singing Hotel Motel. Come on. Come on, Roland.
Not really.
Holiday.
You know that song?
Inn. You know
so
that one, right?
Yes, you do. Thank God.
So, this is, you know, it makes you feel good. And, you know, they are singing live all of their hits. And we're doing some of the dances back in the day, you know, so Butterfly.
So, Yolanda, you've been working
Snake.
Out, losing weight. So, is that how you did it?
It is not how I did it. I walk, and you know, you're keeping me pretty busy, so.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna keep on the toes.
But however, I don't have those arms, and so if Donna can guarantee that I can get those arms,
oh, you
let's
want,
get
you
started.
Want those arms during this video? Can you get those arms during this video?
You can get stronger. You can definitely improve your muscle mass.
You gotta lift something while doing this video.
I don't hear her saying
lift something while doing this video.
You can. They may not look exactly like mine, but they're gonna be better with the arms that you have. How about that? You're gonna improve what you already have.
There we go.
Because you're already fabulous.
Okay, but here's the deal.
So
play the video. So the guys in the back, Mel and Mel knows cats, they're holding microphones. And so, but can you do the exercise with light dumbbells or whatever?
You can do it with very light dumbbells, but not heavy, because you really want to focus on the cardiovascular part of it. But you're singing, you're dancing, you're feeling
good.
Y'all
dancing kind of slow. I dance faster than that.
It does, normally. That's just one of the moves there. But it gets, you know, where you can do the running man and some of the fun dances back in the day. You know how to do that, Roland.
I can do all that.
You're dancing with me, you're grooving with Sugar Hill Gang, you're moving your body, and you're losing those unwanted pounds. It's a party right in your home. You don't have to go out.
Rhythm and coordination are required.
Rhythm and coordination.
Sure, Michael, you got rhythm and coordination?
It will improve your rhythm and coordination for sure.
You know, I'm not the best dancer.
Don't embarrass black conservatives either.
I'm not the best dancer. You know, it's funny because my girlfriend was joking about this last night when we were talking, and she was like, babe, you just have no rhythm. I said, I know. It's all right, though.
Yeah, but if you just get up and do your own thing.
Hey, it's okay, bro.
You on the 1-3?
No, I did.
I know how that feels.
No, I did actually take dancing classes when I was younger. My mom required that.
Okay.
Yeah. Your mama knew you couldn't dance.
Roland, you know what we should do? Because, you know, when you move and you get up and dance, it does help with your coordination.
No, it
does.
You
do feel better, even if you're not a dancer.
So you really need this DVD.
So you need this.
Hey, I'm check out the DVD.
So can we do this, you guys? Can we start a challenge where people just put on some old school music and do their favorite dance?
How about
well,
that?
He can't dance.
But he can.
Roland,
what's your favorite dance?
I can follow the moves on the DVD.
Hashtag old school dance party. That's what we're going to do. Roland, you're going to kick it off with
hashtag his
me.
Ass ain't got rhythm.
I want you all to get out
all
there.
All right, I got to go to a break. I'll be right back. News 1 Now, TV 1, talking with Donna Joyner and the rhythmless Shermichael.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Y'all, it's been rough in the last 60 seconds dealing with Shermichael. First and foremost, let me show you these photos here. This was Devon Steele getting married. His daughter Leah Steele was, of course, in the wedding over the weekend. He's a football player for the Houston Texans. And so before they were just melting all kind of folks' heart. Remember, she actually survived cancer. And so they had a fabulous time at the wedding this weekend. So we certainly want to give a shout out to the Steeles on their wedding. And of course, we're so happy that his daughter her cancer is in remission. You see me wearing the St. Jude pin, of course, is all about children's research when it comes to cancer. We had a fundraiser last night at Salamander Resort. We're going to have video from that tomorrow. We raised $125,000, so we'll show you some of that video on tomorrow from our St. Jude Wine Country Harvest. And so we'll have that for you tomorrow on the show. And also, don't forget Donna here with her old school dance party video. Trust me, we're going to come back. Shermichael, we're going to shoot some video of Shermichael. In about 3 months to see if he improved his rhythm watching Donna's video. So we'll see. I gotta go. I'm gonna see y'all tomorrow with Rhythmless Shermichael. Holla!
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.